Good evening, America, and welcome back to The Bootstrap. I am your devastatingly handsome host, Ed, and tonight I am joined, as per usual, by my illustrious white feminist co-host, Rachel. Say hello to the people, Rachel.
Hello, people.
And this evening, we are incredibly blessed to have a very, very special guest with us this evening. Some of you may remember, I mentioned it on the show a couple weeks ago, our two listeners that are out there, that I took a camping trip with my daughter, and at the end of it, we visited a magical place in northern Michigan known as Idlewild. And we were shown around Idlewild by this extremely kind and knowledgeable soul who took time out of her day to meet up with two complete strangers and share some really important history. So that kind soul has seen fit to join us tonight. And so I want to introduce all of you, dear listener, to Miss Lydia Hicks. Lydia is an artist. She's a visual artist and has done several experiential video projects, and I'll let her talk about where you might be able to access those. She has spent time as an artist in residence at Interlochen Center for the Arts and is currently studying marine biology at University of North Carolina. So I'm sure I didn't get everything in there, so I'm going to let her fill in the blanks. But Miss Lydia Hicks, welcome to The Bootstrap.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to see you again and to be here and meet Rachel.
Yes. Rachel is very excited to meet you, too.
Yes. I'm really excited about this.
She's really jazzed. So, I'm ecstatic that you're here. I told Elise that you would be joining us tonight. And, I was like, if you want to stop in and say hi, you can. And she was like, oh, okay. So that probably won't happen. But, you know, she's 14 and too cool for all of this. But want to tell you, though, Elise had an amazing time when you gave us that tour. And she talked about it all the way home. And it has been a rare thing since she became a teenager that I have seen her inspired to learn about a subject by any educator. And so I want to commend you. The time that you spent with us, the tour that you gave to us, that really was meaningful to her. So thank you.
That's so sweet. And I appreciate too that you told me before. It was really awesome to meet you too. And that was like the first tour I've given of Idlewild.
So, really?
Yeah, it was really... I was like, "What? I don't even know what I'm doing."
Well, I guess maybe I should tell the story of how we met, right? Because it was super random.
Yeah, it was random and funny.
Yeah, yeah. So
you tell your side.
Okay. So I'm a black guy who enjoys the outdoors. Okay. And what I'm finding is that in some spaces, that's a real rarity. So, you know, I join online forums and groups. One of the groups I'm a part of on Facebook is called Outdoor Afro Detroit. And so you all out there know how groups work on Facebook, right? It's like-minded individuals who enjoy similar things. They post messages to each other. And I was just asking, you know, it was like the beginning of summer. I was just asking, you know, who was planning a backpacking trip? Where are people going? I'm always looking for places to go in Michigan because I think I've been to most of the backpacking spots in Michigan at this point. And this random person who I'd never met before commented and was like, "I'd love to give you a tour of Black Eden." You know, and I'm like, what's Black Eden, right? And so she's like, Idlewild. And so I looked at an upcoming trip that my daughter and I were taking, and where we were going to be was going to be only about a 30-minute drive. And so I was like, you know what, let's do it. And we pulled up there on the street on the island, and you know, the rest is history. So please tell your side.
Yeah. So I have the same experience of being a black person who loves the outdoors and wildlife. And so I'm also in these online forums, but on Facebook, Ed's profile was Scott Edwards. And I was actually in the process of applying, you know, like waiting for my applications and researching, possible mentors and places to study. And Scott Edwards is actually a really incredible ornithologist who works at Harvard. And
I'm so sorry to disappoint.
it was so funny because I was like, there's no way, because also you didn't have like any photos. So I was like, what if in last, I think summer 2020, he did a cross country bike trip and went through Michigan. Oh, wow. And I was like, oh my gosh, what if he's coming back? So I was just like, oh, I've got to get this person to come to Idlewild.
That's perfect.
And I messaged you when you said that you were going to be nearby, and I was like, you don't happen to be an ornithologist, do you?
Yeah.
When you researched him and you were excited, I was like, okay, this will be funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm sorry.
It was some kind of sign.
I'm not that guy, but he seems really cool. Actually, he does seem like a really amazing scientist, and you know, I'm going to read up on some of his work. How many black ornithologists are there?
I know.
Right? At the level of working within an Ivy League institution, even. That's pretty mm-hmm. amazing. So
maybe you should become an ornithologist to like challenge
and
him.
We'll compete.
And like be very confusing.
Edward Scott.
You know, I worked at a place where there was I used to work for an organization called City Year, right? It's an AmeriCorps mm-hmm. program. And when I worked there, there was a guy within the network named Scott Edwards. And whenever we had like national meetups, we would get confused for one of them.
Just working in an office with you where one person had also the last name Scott and then another person was named Scott, that was confusing.
That was another weird thing is we had all these other random coincidental similarities. Like I've also worked for AmeriCorps.
Oh.
For Habitat for Humanity. I don't even know if that came up at the
no.
we talked before. I don't think so. And some of my friends had just come out of City Year.
Wow.
And then I had been trying to I actually now I've started an LLC called Black Eden Botanicals. All the paperwork's through now. And nice. I mentioned to you that I was trying to get a hold of MSU Extension.
Yep.
You're like, oh my gosh, that's what I do.
Yeah. So, it was perfect. It was fate.
It was really cool. Yeah. So the universe was still looking out. Mm-hmm.
So it was fantastic. So I guess, before I let you get into, you know, really the reason why I was so excited to have you on the show, I guess I'll share this other anecdote. I learning about Idlewild was not new for me. I had heard of the place. My father had told me stories about vacationing there in the 60s and 70s. He lived in Detroit at the time. And, you know, for him, it was like this beautiful black Mecca. And he would go to Idlewild because he also enjoyed the outdoors. He loved to fish. And he used to tell me about how he would run into like Motown stars and like see all these great shows and everything at Idlewild. But I never knew where it was. I knew it was in Michigan somewhere up north, but I never knew where it was. And for work, I happened to be in Lake County doing something. I think we're interviewing people or something like that. At the end of the day, some of the people we were with said, hey, there's this great ice cream shop in Baldwin, Michigan. Let's go get ice cream at the end of the day. So we went, and in that ice cream shop, there's like murals of Motown stars on the wall, pictures of these black celebrities. I see like black teenagers behind the counter, black people coming in and out of the door. And listen, I love my black people. It's just there's certain spaces that I have... just life has taught me not to expect to see very many of them. Northern Michigan is one of those spaces. And when I say Northern Michigan, I'm going to say anything north of Saginaw. Okay. And so, you know, I leaned over to my coworker. I'm surrounded by a group of white people at this point. I leaned over to my coworker and I'm like, you know, not that this isn't absolutely beautiful to me, but I'm not used to seeing black people in Northern Michigan. Like what? Why are there so many black people here? And she says to me, well, don't you know where you are? And I said, no. And she says, well, this, you know, Idlewild, Michigan is right around the corner from here. And it was a really famous resort town. And she starts telling me some history that I already knew. And I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. So this is where it is. That was, I don't know, 4 years ago now, five maybe. And I've always kind of intended to come visit and just generally explore, but hadn't really had a chance to. So, yeah. You were the gateway. So Ms. Hicks, I guess I'm just going to turn things over to you for a little while. Idlewild is this incredible, magical place. Can you tell us a little bit of the history that you've learned along the way?
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. I can get into it for sure. I'll just focus on the things that excite me. It was founded in 1912, and there was this large plot of land, and buses were put together of folks from Chicago, mostly in Detroit, to come be like the first people to kind of develop Idlewild. And one of them, who is like my crush and my favorite person ever to exist, is Lela Wilson. And she was kind of like a mastermind of this whole, the idea of making it Black Eden. She was into metaphysics and was basically, I don't know if she ever officially went like around saying she was a Black socialist, but she was basically a Black socialist. And she started, like, the area where my house is called Paradise Gardens, or the Wilson's Paradise Gardens. And so she developed all of this area, and all the streets are named after virtues, and also majority Black cities where she thought people would be visiting from. So, and this was like before anyone had gotten there, you know? And so she and a group of other folks were just like, and here we are, we're already starting into my own conspiracy theories. So she wanted to actually create a factory, like a place where people could come and have jobs and you know, live a good life. And the surrounding area didn't want that many Black folks to be there full time. So that's why I think they made it a resort town.
Interesting.
But everything about Idlewild is like just a radical space, period. It's like, They had the first hospital in Lake County. They had credit unions. It was like Marcus Garvey's dream, you know?
Wow.
And they even, like, in the 30s, late 20s, Lela Wilson helped fund a Marcus Garvey chapter in Idlewild. There was a Liberty House around the corner from where my place is now. And then also in the 50s, she helped start a garden club, which was also like thinly veiled, very radical community based organizing, where they would help each other, like fix up each other's yards. They organized the library, like all this stuff. But it's like, oh, yeah, it's just a garden club, you know, all this stuff. But oh, yeah, it's just a resort town. And so that's a lot of the stuff I love. And they a lot of the focus does tend to be on the famous people that came, but I get really excited about the revolutionary stuff. And Du Bois. So I found out about Idlewild. I have another master's already in film from CalArts. And right near CalArts is another historically Black resort town called Belverde. When I was at school there, one of my best friends, Rebecca Jackson, and her sibling, we were all hanging out, and her sibling came in the door and was like, oh my God, there's all these Black people in the park. And we're like, what? We ran down there and we found out kind of like, Ed, we're like, they're all like, this is a historically Black resort town. And it turned out to be like the only place in LA County where Black people could swim year round. Hattie McDaniel dedicated the swimming pool.
Wow.
And it was known as the Black Palm Springs of Hollywood.
Wow.
And, Yeah. And so I was like, what? And then I found out it was a thing, you know, that they're actually we're all over the place. And I was actually born in Ohio. And so I found out later that one of my great aunts had actually come to Idlewild, and through having a residency and working at Interlaken, I was like, oh, I'm so close, actually. So I was able to come visit. And then when the pandemic blossomed, my job imploded, and there was a lot of racist nonsense that I was dealing with and had to leave. I was actually in Cape Cod. And so one of my mentors at Interlaken said that I could stay with her as long as I wanted. And on a whim, I kind of was like, let me look at one of these houses that's posted on Trulia. There was that SNL skit about, it was basically, I don't know if you guys have seen this, about like looking at houses online. I'll send you the link later.
It's good. It's a good one.
It's really funny. And I was like, oh no, it's me. I was like, well, the world is ending, so I might as well look at this house. And a week after I got to my friend's place in Michigan, this lawsuit paid out. So like in 2014, I was in a Black Lives Matter protest in Los Angeles. There were 200 of us that were illegally arrested. And so we filed a class action lawsuit, and I was one of the representatives in the case, and it paid out like that week.
Wow.
And then I also got the Artists United COVID relief grant. And so that covered my deposit.
Wow.
And so suddenly I was like, oh, this house that I just looked at, I could actually, I could actually get it. And it was so, like, as I was leaving this job, and it was actually on the day that George Floyd was murdered. And I also had found this article that Du Bois had written in 1921. So, like, literally 100 years ago, I think this month, about his trip to Idlewild. And in the article, he's like, I was able to buy my first property there. And like the passion, the way that he talks about it is amazing. Like, he's just like, this is the best place that has ever happened, compares it to everywhere. Like, Martha's Vineyard hasn't got anything on it. But the thing is, it was like in the early days. So there was nothing there. It was just literally the island where I had Ed meet me. There was a clubhouse where everyone would come and get fed. And, these little like kind of tent structure buildings that became what they called dog houses, basically like a one room cabin. And they like built out from there. But it was like the whole thing that was beautiful about it was just being able to be together with Black people in a safe space that was beautiful. And I was like, that's still what we want.
Yes.
You know? Yes. And it's still what Idlewild is. And it's in that way. That's why it's always going to be magic.
For sure. Yeah. So, okay. You have to say more about the house that you bought, though, because that was also a stop on the tour. And yes, it's not just a house. It's like a whole compound.
It's a whole compound.
And so you shared some really amazing things with me in terms of like future plans for it. So tell us a little bit about your property.
Yeah, so the property that I was able to adopt is the Poindexter Residence and Motel. It was built in the 50s, and it has like a little house. It's a 3-bedroom house, and in the backyard is a 5-unit motel, but they're very tiny rooms. So I'm working on making it into a residency for artists and scientists. So basically like a biological station that will also host artists and help like bring back young folks that are interested in doing projects centered around Idlewild and all of the many things that it is. And the property itself, it's on about 3/4 acre. It's around the corner from Paradise Lake. And it's right across the street from this really awesome bog that has like native Michigan carnivorous plants. and cram like all this really, really cool stuff. And so actually I didn't think I was going to get into grad school because the summer was like winding away. And so I thought I'd just spend another year. I've been rehabbing the house, and about a month into getting in there, I found a huge mold problem. So I had to gut like the front of it, and I've been like spent most of the last year rebuilding that. But I, now that I am here, I am going to be having my first artist in residence in my own house. And they're actually one of my students from Interlochen who grew up in Traverse City. His name is Jamie John. He's an indigenous Anishinaabe radical, amazing kid who is working on art, community art projects. He's also, I think he just got named as a board member for the Traverse City Outfest.
Wow.
He just got into Sundance Lab, and like just incredible, incredible kids. So I feel silly calling him a kid, but he's actually like in a lot of ways how like he just we have a ton of similarities, and I'm so excited to be able to already offer something that could help, you know, him in his journey.
So what do you think about the potential of a space like Idyllwild today, right? It still seems to be kind of a resort community where maybe people come in the summertime because they own a property, they own a cabin or something. But what do you think about its potential today? I mean, you talked about like really being in love with kind of the revolutionary history of it. Can it be that again?
I don't think it's ever left. I think it's been underground, but I think that, like I found little threads. Have you ever heard of what is it? Oh, I just blanked on their name. That started in Detroit, the Shrine of the Black Madonna.
Oh yeah. Very familiar. Yeah.
Almost all of the founding people are have places in Idyllwild.
Really? Okay. I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my gosh, so why isn't there a shrine here? And then there's also, like in the 70s, Grace Lee Boggs came out, and actually they had like a conference in the Casablanca. I showed you that building. Mm-hmm. They had a conference there, and one of the other people that was there was making the Black Power Afro pics.
Yes. Wait, and Rachel, do you know what she's talking about?
I'm doing some furious Googling right now to to just keep my head above water. So
okay, no problem.
That's awesome. He was making those in Detroit and decided to move the operation to Idyllwild. Wow. And so they like for a while they were making them right there and actually fulfilling like Lila Wilson's early.
Yeah, there really was manufacturing.
Yeah. And there's people there now who, I'm working with on, helping, you know, get those things going again. And I think the desire has always been there, and it's just that there's a lot of, a bit of an identity crisis, but I think it's more so about, the fear of being too seen or like having what is there taken away. Mm-hmm. Like it happens so many times in other places, and like trying to figure out how to have you ever looked at what is her name, Joy DeGruy, and she talks about post-traumatic slave syndrome.
I've heard of her and that theory, but I haven't looked into it. No.
Yeah, it's this theory, and I might mess it up, but it's basically like our traumas, and really any group of people, our traumas are like passed down in ways that we don't really realize. Mm-hmm. That in a nutshell. And one of the things that she talks about a lot is Black parenthood and how that affects, keeps, you know, trickling down And one of the things that we do a lot is, it's not even really internalized stuff, but it's like a way, one of the ways that we keep each other together is by pulling each other down.
Yeah.
Because like in slave times, if, you know, you would get sold, but if it was, if you, there was something wrong with you, you might not be able to be sold.
Right.
And so she talks about that a lot, and that, and that's a feeling that I get a lot when I'm there, is like, if we make this look too nice, it'll be taken away from us, you know?
Well, I have to say, I think that's a very real possibility, you know? So, you know, Northern Michigan is this space that is home not only to, you know, a magical place like Idyllwild, but also some extremely conservative, racist, and in some cases violent elements of our society. Michigan has several groups that consider themselves militia that operate in and around that same area in some cases. So yeah, that's a real threat.
No, totally. Like the week after I got into my house, the group was arrested like 20 minutes down the street. Wow. The group that tried to kidnap the governor. So
it's very
real. And and even just over the summer, there were several incidents of folks coming onto Idyllwild Lake with Confederate flags and just being ridiculous. And also, like, on the other end, there's always people trying to just buy up the land because it is, it is beautiful, and it's, you know, there's lakes everywhere, and there's not a, a lot of development messing it up now, but it is, it does feel like a really, really risky. And so it's hard, it's also hard to figure out from my standpoint of like, how do I not be one of those gentrifying artists, you know?
I'm not going to lie. I want to be. I fully want to be. So I came home from that trip and started looking at properties available in Idyllwild. And, you know, so here in the Metro Detroit area, the housing market is ridiculous, right? Like, you'll pay $300,000 for a two-bedroom ranch, you know, and 1,500 square feet or something in Idyllwild. And I'm comfortable saying this because I know nobody's listening. In Idyllwild, though, I mean, they've got plots of land available where it's like 10 acres for $5,000 undeveloped, right? And I mean, I will at a certain point, probably in the very near future, I'm going to make one of those purchases. I just, it's ridiculous not to.
Well, but that's the difference, is I hope that you do, you know, and I hope that more Black people come in and build up the community. But how do we make sure that it doesn't get turned into another strip mall, or how do we make sure the history isn't forgotten and stuff like that?
You know, my daughter made a really interesting observation. I talk about race issues and things like that in front of her, with her often. And we were on our way to meet you, you know, and, you know, just before you get to the bridge where you cross onto the island, there's all these really like cute little bungalow homes. And as we were driving through, several of them had people sitting outside, and they all happened to be like older white people. Mm-hmm. And she's looking out the window and she looks back at me and she's like, I thought this was supposed to be Idyllwild. They're everywhere. And I wasn't sure whether to be like really proud of her feeling that way, or like, have I created a monster?
Maybe a little of both.
Because I don't hate the whites. Yeah. Right? There's a few good ones out there, but also the way that things like that happen, right? The gentrification, the slowly taking over beautiful areas that had initially been set aside or reserved for people of color, Black people specifically. It's very easy to see that happening there already, right?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
So one other fun observation. So while we were up there, I don't know if you may remember this. We met, where we met was kind of like a park. Mm-hmm. And there were some boys, some teenage boys that like they all like pulled up on their motorbikes or something right around the time we were getting ready to like take a walk somewhere. And they were roughhousing, right? Like messing around, pushing each other around. One of them actually bumped into me as we were walking by. And, you know, it's whatever. He bumped into me and I just kind of kept walking. Later on that day, though, on the way home, my daughter was like, yeah, I know two of those kids. They live right around the corner from us.
Oh, what? That's so funny.
And she's like, but I don't like them, so that's why I didn't say anything.
Oh, my gosh.
So, it's, yeah, there's this huge, huge legacy here in the metro area of Black people who I know or come into contact with who have property up there, right? Mm-hmm. And it's been in the family for generations now. Yeah. It's important to maintain that, I think.
Totally. Yeah. And a lot of there, it's also an interesting place to think about intergenerational wealth in the mm-hmm. Black community, because it got lost or dropped off for a second there.
Yeah.
And I don't think, like, a lot of people say, when you just Google Idlewild, a lot of people, and any Black resort town, actually, they say that after civil rights was when Black people stopped coming mm-hmm. and felt disinterested. And so that's why it declined. I think that is bullshit.
Say more.
Because how, I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, can you imagine if the protests of last summer resulted in actual defunding of the police and then Black people stopped wanting to do Black things. Like, you know, like, how could you win a major victory or any kind of anything, like any sports team being like, okay, we won, let's go home.
Yeah.
Or like, let's go like hang out with the other team, or I don't know. Well, it doesn't make any sense.
I think maybe it does though. Let me tell you why, because I wrestle with this myself, being a parent. Being a parent who's able to, in some respects, not all, but in some respects, provide a certain lifestyle for my daughter. And my own parents, I think, suffered from this too. There's this internalized white supremacy that exists in a lot of us that says we want to be where the white people are. So we want the nice house and we want the good schools. And the good schools means high test scores and primarily white students. That's what that means, right? Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people will admit to that necessarily, but we say we want the good schools. That's what we mean. And I think, you know, when I think about like, okay, so the Civil Rights Act passed and there were communities that maybe it hadn't been okay to go to before and now it was, I could see Black people who had the means to do so and the curiosity to do so saying, well, you know, we've gone to a place like Idlewild or Valverde year after year after year. What's happening in Traverse City? What's happening in, you know, whatever other resort town? And I think it's not lost on me that it could be easy if you were a person who had been living under these restrictions to suddenly have the ability to visit elsewhere, to want to do that, right? And that's not a good thing, right? Because it's to the detriment of you and the space potentially too. But I could see how it happens.
I feel that, but I also, like, there's still families that are there now that have been coming for since the beginning,
yeah.
You know, 4 or 5 generations. And so it's weird to hear people say that people stop coming when they're still there.
Yeah.
It's more like, I don't know, Invisible Man or something. Like,
yeah.
Well, then
yeah.
who are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who are we? Where are we?
Or like the and way also, we talk about Indigenous people in the past tense.
Amazing. You know? Yeah. Completely.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
And I also, this brings me to my other conspiracy theory of a lot of this is in Ron Stevens' book, Idlewild, the rise, decline, and rebirth. So he talks about the conference that I mentioned with Grace Lee Boggs, and then and the factory. And that same year, I think they came in 1970. That same year, there happened to be this explosion of prostitution.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, And to me, that just seems like FBI. You know, like, and also rewinding a little bit to civil rights, the Arthur Braggs was one of the main people who developed like the nightclub scene. He built up the Paradise Club that was on Paradise Lake around the corner from my house. Mm-hmm. And actually Lila Wilson like basically funded and mentored him. And he had the Paradise Club, and he also did he named the Idlewild Review, which toured all over the US and Canada. All of the performers that were in Idlewild all summer, like the Four Tops and Della Reese and all the dancers. And he foresaw like that, you know, the economy would be shifting after civil rights, and he was on the local township board at that point, and said, you know, we have to invest in the town to be able to pivot. And they were like, nah, we'll be fine, and you can go, and we don't need you here. And so he actually left. And then right when he left, he was really into numbers games and did a lot of like community gambling. And apparently there was a lot of history of, like, it was numbers games, but it was also like if someone wasn't doing so great, they would just happen to win.
Oh, nice.
So there was this like community support built into it. And so after he left, he kept doing it. I think he went to Saginaw. I can't remember now. Mm-hmm. He moved, and he started getting followed by the FBI.
Big surprise.
And I looked that up, and right when civil rights was won, the FBI actually launched this huge campaign cutting down on numbers games across the U.S. And also, the first state lottery started in 1964.
Interesting. So we're going to outlaw it, but then make it legal for this other group.
Yeah, for us.
Wow.
So let's like leech all of the money out of these small communities that are helping each other.
Yep.
And build a bunch of prisons, basically.
Wow.
You know, this, so after learning about Idlewild, when Ed got back from backpacking, I have spent a bit of time on the Idlewild Wikipedia page, which I am understanding now is extremely whitewashed.
Like 70% false? Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I haven't looked at it.
Yes. And I knew because the Wikipedia page loves to talk about like this quirky fact that Idlewild was built by white investors. So imagine my total surprise to learn that no, in fact, like it is the brainchild of a black woman. Like, yeah.
Well, it was sold, like the people that organized the buses that I mentioned, mm-hmm. those were white guys, but yeah. they basically handed it over and sold it to this group of, yeah. of black folks. So it is, that is true. But I mean, you don't need to emphasize it.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, what land didn't white people own?
Yeah. That?
Yes.
So
I'm curious, Rachel, I want you to tell us more, because when I came home and, you know, I was talking to the folks on the podcast, I was really excited. I still am, about Idlewild and everything we had learned and the great experience we had. Rachel mentioned that, you know, she asked her father or uncle or something about it. And like the members of your family were really familiar with it.
Yeah. I mean, So with all of my mom's family that's from the West Side, and I was with my uncle and a great aunt, and I was like, guys, I learned about this cool place, Idlewild, and they really laughed at me because they were abundantly familiar with it. I mean, my great aunt is 90, so she has lived in the area her entire life, so she definitely knew what Idlewild was, and my uncle did too, but it just, I can't, like, the amount of time that we've been in Baldwin, it's insane to me that it never came up at all, except that's just white people being white people. And I was talking to my cousins about it, and their dad is that uncle, And there, I was chatting with three of them, and the youngest one knew about Idlewild, had like driven through with her dad before and was like, yeah, I know Idlewild. But her older sisters, who are my age, didn't know. And we were all like, how did we not know about this? Like, how this information just isn't shared. It isn't, yeah, isn't available. And it, I don't know. It's weird.
To be fair.
I mean, it isn't weird, but.
I never read about Idlewild in any history book I was ever provided with in school. I only knew it existed because my father used to tell me stories about it, you know? And again, I spent a long time living in Michigan, not even knowing where it was. Like, there's not signs or anything like that until you get very close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I have been telling everyone at Interlochen about Idlewild, and they have been working, I'll say, for a long time at, you know, helping students of color that end up in northern Michigan who are like, where the heck am I?
Yeah.
And where are the other brown people? So they've Interlochen has been trying to like attract and recruit more staff and faculty of color.
Really?
Well, yeah. Wow.
Okay. Well, so that's actually a really great segue, because there's this other topic that I was kind of curious about that I wanted to just get your take on. And that is, so you've been to Interlochen, you were an artist in residence there. I went there as I went to the summer camp as a teenager, and then I worked there every summer that I was in undergrad as a camp counselor.
Awesome. When were you there?
Let's see. I went as a camper 94 and 95, those summers, I think. And then from 97 to 2001, I was on the staff. And three of those years, I was a counselor. And then the last two of those years, I was like the director of the camp division that we were in. And those last 2 years, I also did, you know, they have like these staff performance groups. And a couple of times I was able to also teach private lessons. And so I'm, you know, I grew up relatively with relatively little. I got to go to Interlochen because I learned about a scholarship program that my school had, you know, that paid for like half of the fee or whatever. And I got there, and actually I think the impact was bigger when I was on the staff than when I was a camper. But I got there and was exposed to this sort of world of wealth that I never could have conceptualized existed, you know. When I was a kid, I remember there was a show called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, you know, with Robin Leach. And like,
I'm
meeting people and they're like, yeah, like this is a picture of my house. And it was like a house that was on the show, you know, and, you know, parents coming to pick their kids up in exotic sports cars that I could never hope to afford.
Flying in.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody flies in on a private jet. Mm-hmm. And so it was just really fascinating to me, because I'm like holding on to my paychecks every other week and like not spending them because I needed to save the $2,000 I was going to make that summer, you know? And so it was just a culture shock. It was really jarring sometimes to be around that and see that. And it wasn't just white people. Like, I met some really wealthy black people and other people of color too. And so I guess I'm just curious, and, you know, I don't know really anything about your own background, but I guess, did you have an experience like that at all in your time there?
100%. I also grew up low income. I like was raised on food stamps and Section 8. And my mom was a single mom and worked like three jobs. And So my thing was, I literally dreamt of going away to a boarding school. I was like, someone needs to help me. Like, find brochures. But I never found Interlochen. Like, there was one in California, but I also always wanted to go to California. Why? But, yeah, I didn't know what Interlochen was either when I got into the residency program. And so I get there and it's like Hogwarts.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, what?
That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, and actually during the school year when I first started, they still had they were still wearing uniforms, and some kids literally had capes. And so I was like, oh my goodness, what is this? And like everything was taken care of. Like you go into the cafeteria and there's no, like you don't have to pay anything.
Yeah.
I was like, wait. And you know, everyone, it's still a cafeteria, so everyone's complaining about the food, but I'm like, yo.
But the food was delicious though.
The food was delicious.
It was some of the best food I'd ever had.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, so I was totally, and also I
and
already
what the heck is a vegan option?
Syndrome. Like,
what the heck is a vegan option? I had never heard the term vegan or met so many vegetarians in my life until I got to Interlaken.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. So I already had imposter syndrome, and then I was like, I'm supposed to be teaching these.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, Nora Jones has gone here?
Yeah.
What?
When I was there, Josh Groban was a camper and a student.
Yeah.
One of my friends in another camp division had Kevin Bacon's nephew.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah. Like, yeah, I met Kevin Bacon. I know the guy.
You can truly 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. You're like a first degree connection.
I am a first degree connection.
Here we are.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yep. It was very, very intimidating. And I sat with it. And actually, my very first interview for the artist, for the filmmaker in residence position was with the director of the science program. And I went out to meet her and she was like, so tell me why we're meeting right now. And I was like, I thought I was getting interviewed, but maybe because I studied zoology in undergrad and I do a lot of scientific films, and we are actually now best friends. She's the person that I stayed with when everything was crumbling. And she's invited me back a number of times to do workshops for her ecology classes and also just for residence life. And one of the workshops I did was working on a what's become a video installation multimedia show on poverty anxiety, using hummingbirds as a device to talk about it. And that's actually where I met Jamie John, the person that's coming to stay at my place. And we did just like a open discussion about classism at Interlaken. So it's actually really awesome that you asked me this.
Yeah.
Because as my first time and all of the times as a teacher there, I try to talk about it because I met several students who were there on full rides. And it is a weird environment to be in all of a sudden, you know, it's like very, very both comfortable in ways that you're not used to. And then also because a lot of the administration has not experienced poverty, there's a lot of things that they don't think about that like students who don't come from money don't have access to.
Yeah.
And so then they're just even more like isolated and kind of left, you know, but it's really just like this, and I think this happens a lot too, just in arts organizations in general, like there's this, utopian idea that when you get to a place, everyone is on the same level somehow magically, which is obviously not the case. And so just trying to, like, learning to be someone who could advocate for, I guess, like my younger self, you know, of like just teaching people how to be able to treat people better and try to be patient.
So this video installation, is this something that people can access?
There are pieces of it. There's like four videos. I actually have I did record it in 3D with a VR video, but I haven't put it together. If you know someone that can edit that stuff, honestly, the other thing is, this is like a vulnerability moment, but when I left my last job, I realized last winter that I have PTSD from my last job, mm-hmm. and I haven't like really been able to do much art, and like put stuff out and put the you know, all of that stuff you're supposed to do for yourself as a creative person. It's just like, I can't do much. But eventually it'll get out there. There's some links on YouTube that I can send you.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'll search for your name on YouTube and see what pops up. I know I did come across, and maybe this is your current podcast, but like, what's it called? Black Eden or Return to Eden? There's Back to Eden. Yeah. There's a couple of videos of you having conversations with other influential folks, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And that was part of my own, like a mixture of self-care and trying to promote the project. Cause I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I have the long game vision and I know where I want it to go, but like the day to day stuff of like making a revolutionary compound for the end of times, I'm not really sure. You know, like, what should I be doing this week?
That works. The bootstrap exists because I was going to explode, you know. Rachel, was it 6 years ago now? Was it 2015?
I hate hearing that said aloud, yeah. But yes, it was 6 years ago.
But you know,
I was an AmeriCorps member, actually.
You were.
Oh, wow.
In Ed's office, yeah.
When really the overt publicity of police killings, you know, started to become a cultural phenomenon. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I have seen violence on television and movies my whole life, on the news, all of that. But when it really started to become targeted at people who look like me, and that's not to say it wasn't happening, but when every cell phone had a camera and you started to see this footage over and over again of Black people being shot by police, mm-hmm. it broke something in me that probably still is not fixed yet. And I, you know, I started trying to figure out, okay, how can I get this out? And so, Scott, one of the people who's not with us tonight, was also a coworker, and he and I used to have conversations just about race in general. He's just a liberal white guy who wants to do the right thing. And, you know, he would ask me questions about this stuff and we would just talk. And I thought, you know, let's record this because I need a space to just verbally like process some of this stuff. Rachel was in the room at the same time, you know, it was like, I'd be happy to be part of that too. And you know, I'm not going to share the story. but you know, we had our own set of conversations as well. And so we just started, there's no real format. We just started having conversations and, I'll tell you that I don't think that I'm better now.
Great to hear.
But,
better
healed.
Internally.
Yeah, okay. Better internally. Mm-hmm. And that's primarily because, you know, I think the problem is still out there, right? Malcolm X says, you know, they won't even admit that the knife is in your back. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, but this is my outlet for that very purpose, right? Just self-care. And we don't know what we're doing here, mm-hmm. but we talk about stuff. And, you know, a place like Idlewild, you know, as a refuge, and a pleasant new voice to join us to talk about things like that. Like, this is all cathartic for us. I hope it is for you, too.
It totally is. And I get really excited about the synchronicities and like knowing, and it's really comforting knowing that other people are thinking about it, too. Like, was it American Tale?
Somewhere out there.
Yeah. You know.
I do.
And actually, okay, so going back to the protests and the arrest, I was working on my thesis at the time, which is a experimental documentary about underrepresented histories of science. And one of my advisors, who's amazing, Douglas Kearney, he's a really incredible poet and educator, was like, it's really great that you are here for the community, but you also need to, you should finish your project because that's also really important.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't have to use your body all the time. And I was like, oh my God. And also in that like you were saying, everything was, it felt heightened right then. And all of my friends were also like, I could tell we were all getting really burnt out. And so I really like tried to shift my project to focus on things that were more about, I guess, like manifesting what we do want and like mm-hmm. building up the things that we do want so that as we're like destroying all of these systems of oppression, there's something to replace it, you know?
Yeah.
Cause is it Naomi Klein that talks about, the shock doctrine when she talks about, when there's a big problem, people just take the answers that are lying around. And so we have to have, you know, the alternative, readily available and ready. So I actually started, and actually after I found out about Belverde, I've always loved water, and it's another, space that is, has a tumultuous history for Black people. And so I started this project called Black in the Water, where I started interviewing my friends and doing these video portraits. And it kind of grew. I got some people that I didn't know in it also, and a lot of artists and really incredible folks. And just talking about Black people and our relationships with water and swimming. And so then I was like, oh my gosh, Belverde. And weirdly, it links to UNCW because I was talking to one of my mentors about it. His name is Johnny Agnew, and he's a Teamster. Like he drives for films and does picture cars and stuff. He's incredible. And we actually we did a pilot show together for like vintage trailers.
Oh wow.
It was on Travel Channel. Like
really?
Times, yeah. It was really, really cool. And he's like a legend already, but he was like, so we're working on this movie a long time ago, and it was somewhere in the South. And there was this church that had a swimming pool in its basement. What? So this is like in my mind, and like the next summer I happened to be working on a film in North Carolina, and I was telling him about it, and he was like, that, I think that's where it was. And so we happened to just be like an hour away from Wilmington on this film. And I think we were in Fayetteville. And so we drove into Wilmington and we did this tour, and there was this racist white guy on our tour who, like, we were all standing waiting, and he was like, I'm just here because I want to see all the statues before the liberals tear them down. And I was like, oh my God. And so, but then surprisingly, our tour guide was also this white guy, but he like got into the history of Wilmington, which is like the only place, I guess, in the US that has had a successful coup. Yeah. So it was one of the most successful places during Reconstruction. Like the government and everything was at least 50 or majority Black. It had like its own Black Wall Street and all this stuff.
And they destroyed everything.
The first Black newspaper. And a white mob came through and murdered everyone and pushed people out and burnt down the newspaper and all these buildings. And the tour guide is telling this story, and we're walking through Wilmington, and the racist dude at one point, like, he just paused and was like, well, wait, so then what happened? And the tour guide was like, nothing happened. That's like,
yeah,
that's where we are right now.
Right.
In this like fucked up alternative universe, you know,
this is what happened.
Your Confederate statues were built. That's what happened. But then I found the church with the pool in the basement, and I got to see, like, I got to go in, but they, and I don't even know if they would want this posted, like, they don't post it online. and you can't take pictures. I found several other like African Methodist Episcopal churches who have these public swimming pools in their basements. There's two of them in St. Louis. And I'm trying to look for more. So it was like, it felt like a really amazing connection while I was working on this project about, you know, Black folks and our histories with swimming. And like, it's so weird. It's one of those other things. It's kind of like Black resort towns where it's like, oh, the stereotype gets promoted that we don't like to swim. Mm-hmm. If we don't like to swim, why the heck would we go through all of this trouble, you know, to have these places? Like, mm-hmm. there's something else that happened here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, there's actually, I just finished a book called The Sum of Us by Heather mm-hmm. McGee. She's an incredibly talented and intelligent and amazing Black woman who has worked for years on Capitol Hill. And The Sum of Us is really all about all of the ways that white America's view of race as a zero-sum game has been to their detriment as well as ours. And there's like a whole three chapters dedicated to public pools. Mm-hmm. And how when desegregation happened and Black people were allowed to go to public pools shut down and were drained mm-hmm. and filled with dirt and paved over in all of these places across the South and some places in the North too.
Yeah.
So I just bring that up because, you know, I think about that stereotype of not knowing how to swim. I'm an excellent swimmer, by the way. but like not knowing how to swim and just, you know, really what that's born out of, you
know,
not liking the outdoors. There was a report, the U.S. Forest Service, I think it was, did a survey like 3 years ago to try to get an understanding of why Black people, don't engage with the outdoors at the same levels as white people. And I remember, I think NPR kind of did a story about it. And I remember thinking, like, did they ask Black people? Because, you know, I can tell you, we have encountered, you talk about like post-traumatic slave syndrome and how our traumas get passed down from generation to generation. Our ancestors encountered horrific things in the woods. Stumbling into clan meetings taking place in a clearing, right? Running for their lives, you know, fleeing slavery or things like that. Even in modern times, maybe not a clan meeting, but running into a white person who might decide to abuse and or kill you. Like these are the reasons why we don't always get excited about the woods, you know?
Yeah. Just this morning, I finally went for a run. It's literally been like at least a year.
Wow.
And I went for a run just like around my new neighborhood. And as I was like almost back to my house, this dog came running out and like barked at me. And I was like I almost just fell, you know.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I mean, it is scary, like being in the South and being outside.
Yeah.
And like not knowing and being in a new place and not knowing how people will react to you. And it's the same in Michigan, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like anytime I'm out and I'm supposed to be becoming a researcher, like, and I love being outside, but I'm also like, there's always the moment of, someone's gonna murder me.
Yeah. I mean, that's real. You know, I love the outdoors. I want to go backpacking. I want to camp. I want to be in these remote places by myself with beautiful scenery around me. Mm-hmm. And that's always in the back of my mind. When mm-hmm. I encounter another human being, what's about mm-hmm. to happen here? And I think that's something, you know, and I don't know, Rachel, maybe this is like your window into some of this. I can't explain that to other people. Even with the words I'm using now, it doesn't quite describe what happens in my chest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just, that's so real, right? That's what you live with.
Yeah. And even in Idlewild, going back to the prostitution history, it's like that history is still affecting people. Like my first few weeks, for some reason, every white guy that I saw at Ace Hardware... So I have this really amazing car. I have to preface it with this, because this is why these random white guys would try to initiate conversations, I think. They'd be like, wow, that's a really amazing car. It's a 1985 station wagon that I've customized into a Prince-mobile, and his name is Prince, or the wagon formerly known as.
It's amazing.
He's really...
I share a birthday with Prince. I now exclusively own it, as he is dead. But yeah, we're birthday friends.
That's really awesome. That's so cool. And it's kind of funny because, like, you know, a lot of people there are very conservative, and I'd be like, yes, this is the queerest car you've hopefully ever seen, and you still have to like it. They all mention, like, oh, there's a lot of prostitutes in Idlewild. And I'd be like, why is that something you would want to mention to me?
It's odd.
Yeah, very uncomfortable. So it also, to me, it reinforces that, like, that was an intentional act, to, like, diminish
Is that factual? So I know you said that there was kind of this scandal that it suddenly became known, for sex trafficking and prostitution. Mm-hmm. Is that factual, or was that?
Yeah, like there was a huge prostitution problem. Hmm. There's a lot of community members that still remember. And I guess a lot of, like, I don't know if you remember the Red Rooster, the restaurant.
Yeah.
A lot of buildings like that were all boarded up. So I guess they used to have a lot more windows, basically. But when that was happening, they closed the windows.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, that's really, really strange.
Yeah.
Like a weird move.
Wow.
So it was real, but I still feel like the inspiration was intentional. Yeah, it wasn't sure. Why would people suddenly think it just was like, and it's weird that it was in the same year that there was like a revolutionary conference. They established a factory in town.
Yeah, it was getting ready to be real economic power.
Yeah.
Happening. And I just want to mention, we are supportive of sex workers here on the Bootstrap.
Totally.
We do not, prostitution is not anything to be ashamed of or anything, bad or anything like that, as long as it's ethical and not exploitative of the sex worker. But that's fascinating to me, and really kind of infuriating that somebody would just approach you,
mm-hmm.
And be like, yeah, there's lots of prostitutes there. And this was a person who doesn't know you, right? And this, unfortunate.
Yeah, talking about your car and then just a hard left into...
Yeah. What does that have to do with your car?
This is what I know about Idlewild. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I feel the same too. I actually was like, part of me was thinking, I wondered if it had started earlier in the history of Idlewild, and in my mind I was imagining like, oh, what if it was like one of the results of the Great Migration, like people that were coming up, from all over with not a lot of resources, and that's what they made of it. But it really does seem more like it was a plant, because it seems like it was out of nowhere. And they kind of capitalized on the hunter community, and also one of the reasons that they had trouble is that they didn't support the sex workers. Like, they, for a long time, they would just arrest and ticket sex workers. And then they eventually started ticketing and putting like the hunters in the newspaper and the pimps and stuff.
Wow.
But it's a lot.
Idlewild.
That's
you
right.
See what I did there?
No.
Sorry. I'm a dad, right? So the bad puns and dad jokes. I can't help it. Wow. So this has been really fascinating. I we're at a little over an hour now, so Rachel's gonna explode if we go too much longer. But
that's not true. This is a good one.
Oh, you're okay. You're okay with the length of this one.
There was
a big debate at the beginning of the Bootstrap about the fact that our episodes are typically an hour, and she wanted them to be half.
And I still stand by that.
I couldn't do it.
Not even just splitting it.
I mean, we occasionally have an episode that's like 40 minutes, 50 minutes, something like that. But
no two-parters?
No. Well, yeah, there's been one or two, I think, along the way. You know, I was looking on the in my file folder where I keep all the recordings. This is episode 82.
Cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, it happens along the way. But I am gonna wrap us up.
Yeah.
But I have to say, Lydia, I want you to know that you have an open invitation, and I would love for you to come back and visit with us and talk to us. Eventually, we'll meet again in person. You know, maybe we should do a Bootstrap retreat in Idlewild.
Right? You should. We
could do that.
I would love to come back anytime. And actually, I don't know what you're doing for Labor Day weekend, but there is going to be, I'm flying up to visit for the weekend, and there's going to be a gumbo cook-off.
Really?
Yeah.
So
I'll share the event with you.
I think after Saturday morning, I actually don't think we have any plans for it.
I think it's the 5th.
Okay.
I'll share it with you.
Yeah, please do. Yeah,
if we can
get up there.
Yeah.
So, and you know, we're gonna make vacation plans for.
Yeah,
for
I have so much to talk to you about. So there's no way that you won't be hearing from me.
Awesome. I love it. Let's keep the communication open. Come back. You know, we'll stay in contact, and you can come back anytime you want to. And I will also invite you when I specifically am like, oh, that's something, you know, we want to ask Lydia about. So, so take a minute. You mentioned a couple of like projects and things you've worked on along the way. Is there anything that you want America to know about or visit, or any ways that we can support you or your art?
Yeah, that's really sweet. I am doing the Black to Eden shows, and so I would love to have you all online. We should do a swap.
Done.
You can check those out on YouTube, and I'm also posting those on my Patreon account, which is helping to fund the development of the compound. So that's patreon.com. I think it's /Lydia Marie Hicks. I'll send it to you to make sure. And I'm also going to be making a GoFundMe pretty soon because I need to put a new roof on the house.
Oh. That sounds expensive.
It was, yeah. And I've been able to do most of the work up till now myself, but I'm in grad school and I can't YouTube that over the weekend. I'm going to get it, you know, done really well to make sure the building lives for a long, long time. So, yeah, I'd love to share that with you, and please feel, there's also, I have an Instagram that's just one that's my name, Lydia Marie Hicks, and also Black Eden _Idlewild for all the Idlewild stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, readily available. I would love to connect and share more always.
Fantastic. So, okay. So the other thing, maybe we won't wrap it up. I don't know. I have so many questions. So you're studying marine biology now. I don't think I knew that you had, that your undergrad, you had done zoology.
Mm-hmm.
So you're studying marine biology now. So like, do you have plans to become like a Jacques Cousteau and like do these amazing scuba videos and like study, I don't know, great white sharks or something like that?
I've already done that part.
Oh, have you? Wow.
I actually did get to do a shark project in South.
Wow.
And that's actually it accidentally was my first experimental film. I didn't know what they were at the time. But I made an essay film about how the media represents sharks and Black people similarly.
Really?
And,
okay,
yeah,
I need
so
to
was,
see this. Is that on YouTube?
It is, yeah. I'll send it to you. So it was kind of a precursor to Black in the Water. And it was also during that same time I got my first photo published with Nat Geo. And that was like a lifelong dream. As a kid, I wanted to work for them and for Discovery Channel. I would always just watch nature videos all the time.
Wait, you have photography published in National Geographic, like in the magazine?
On the website, like for Shark Week. Wow. On TV. Yes.
See, I had no idea that you were real famous, actually.
No. Well, and also like very cool. I think definitely the coolest person who's ever been on the Bootstrap.
Yeah, I'll give you that for sure.
Okay. That's really sweet. Well, it is cool. And then it's also like there's the tragic part of it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it was that in particular was like one of my, you know, lifelong dreams. And realizing, strangely enough, that, wildlife film is actually even more sexist and racist than Hollywood.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that.
And just trying to figure out how I'm actually just supposed to survive as a human was very, very difficult. And so that's why I have decided finally to go to I should finish and become a scientist and have that be like the bread and butter. Hopefully like I can just do research and make the weird stuff that actually still makes me really happy and not worry about douchebags.
Unfortunately, I think they will always be with us, but
they will always be douchebags. But
that actually, so that's a great place to leave this conversation. There will always be douchebags, and then we'll pick it up the next time you come back. So, America, as always, you can reach us at podcastbootstrap@gmail.com. We are on the Twitters at @bootstrap_now, not Instagram. Maybe we should. And if you leave a 5-star review for us anywhere on any podcasting platform, I will get it. I will find it. I'll read it, all that stuff online. And I might even call you and reach out to you and see if you want to come on the show, because we do that. That's how Jeff got here, frankly. Get in touch with us and interact with us. And I think that's all I got for you. So good night, America. Say good night to the people, Rachel.
Good night, people.
Lydia.
Good night, everybody.